My name is Donnie. I'm an alcoholic and addict. And Black Experience Group is my home group. And I want to thank Judy from the bottom of my heart for asking me to share. And I also want to say thank you. I want to thank you, Judy, for getting back up again. I showed a spiritual video of this guy by the name of Nick V. He has no arms and no legs. And he said, no matter how many times you fall down, if it's 100 times, get back up the 101st time. Because you'll never know what would happen if you don't get back up. And God loves you even when you fall down. Mary Lake told me something years and years ago, and I used to spend some time with her. She said, Donnie, when you fall down, fall forward. At least you're 2 steps ahead. She said, stop falling backwards. Because when you fall backwards, you get those big hickeys on your head. And that doesn't feel too good. And I thank God for the teachers in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because my PO was having some problems with me. And I wanted to get him off my back. And went to Salvation Army for quite a while. And that didn't work out too well. They sent me home every day. And they didn't understand that at home, where all my problems was, and I could not stop drinking and using. And eventually, I found myself, fell in another urinalysis and found myself in Hinomaca. I thank God for Hinomaca. I walked in Hinomaca November the 14th, 1986. And I did not know when I walked into that program what they had to offer. I walked in and they was on the 4th step. And they were doing this thing called the board. And I asked, what is this? And they said, you're going to write down your worst sexual experience in front of the group. And I said, my worst sexual experience? He said, yeah. I said, what they got to do with my drinking? He said, I thought you didn't have no drinking problem. I said, I don't. But I know this ain't got nothing to do with it, right? And they began to share about their personal life in front of other people. I wasn't raised up like that. I was born and raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I went to all black schools ever since I was 4 years old. I never went to school with anyone who was not black. My best friend is in town right now. He's here to watch his godson. My son played for UH. He scored his first touchdown on that field. That means the world to me. And, you know, he's here to watch him play football. You know, the deal about that is that he probably would still have a future, even if I hadn't got sober, I believe. But I believe because I'm sober that those children that God allowed me to raise have a life because of Alcoholics Anonymous that's second to none. They haven't seen me drink. They haven't seen me use. They haven't seen me beat my wife. They haven't seen me do any of that stuff. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say that sometimes because, you know, I've been teaching domestic violence for the last 24 years, right? I've been a substance abuse counselor for the last 26 years. And you know what? I wouldn't change my life at all. I've tried to get away from this field at times, but God always lead me right back to this field, telling me he knows exactly what I need to do. I'm an accountant. I can make more money doing accounting, but that's not what he wants me to do. And all the time, it reminds me of what this program is really about. You know, the guy that I bought a plaque when he celebrated 5 years, and I celebrated 1. I told John that I bought him that because I wanted to tell him how much I appreciate what he done for me. And he said, I can't repay him. I have to repay Alcoholics Anonymous. And that day we took the responsibility statement. And I'm going to tell you that there has not been a day since that 1 year birthday that I have went a day in this program without sponsoring a man of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for that. I have a guy in this room that have been with me for 27 years, right? We've been together for 27 years. We still best friends to the day. Sometimes I call him dad. Sometimes I call him big brother. And he's like a sponsor, but he's a sponsee, right? And I got a bunch of friends sitting over at that table, belong to my home group. I cannot tell you the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous unless I told you that it wasn't always like this. The fact of the matter was that PO of mine was sending me to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop drinking and using. I came to Hawaii in 1977 because Hawaii had 2 of the top 5 marijuanas in the world. I didn't come here because of the military. The military brought me here because they paid my way. And I appreciate that. But that's not why I came here, for the military. I got here in 1977, and alcohol and drugs was always a part of my life, ever since I was about 14 years old. But what was more embedded in me was not drugs and alcohol. About 6 or 7 years old, I watched my house get raided for the first time. At 9 years old, I learned how to revive a guy who died on heroin. At 10 years old, I was selling drugs already. And remember, I'm a star road student in school. I'm a street thug. I'm a good athlete. And I go to church every Sunday. But my lifestyle was doing what people in my neighborhood do. My mother was very strict. You know, they call it child abuse today. She called it discipline. And I'm thank God for it. I learned respect. I learned what respect was all about. And it has gone a long way in my life. It has allowed me to raise some kids with some respect. But like I said, I came to Hawaii. I spent 6 years in the military. It did me well. It helped me a lot. But drugs and alcohol was always a part, all the way through my military career. And after that, I think in 1982, I was in Kentucky, and they came out with a urinalysis test. I was scheduled to reenlist in 30 days and go to Germany. I was going to Germany because they had good beer. I wanted to drink some, and they had good hash, and I knew that's where I wanted to go. But when that team came on my desk to notify the troops that we was going to be doing urinalysis, I had a moment of clarity, and it said, get out the Army before they kick you out. And I decided at that point to get out of the military. Came back to Hawaii in 1984 with my ex-wife at that time. I had a 2-year-old daughter, and that didn't work out too well, and she found someone else. I don't know how she could have found somebody better than me. I remember telling her, how can you leave a nice guy like me? But that's what she decided to do, and I found myself turning to drugs and alcohol to deal with that. Even though I was still using at that time, I believe it became more important in my life at that point because I was an education counselor. I'm used to counseling people. And I figured that, you know what, you can tell everybody else what to do, but I could not come up with my own answers at that time. And eventually, crying out to God, I've been going to the same church here in Hawaii for the last 37 years. I still belong to that same church today. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous made me a better church member, but I believe church has made me a whole lot better Alcoholics Anonymous member also. And I'm thankful for that church. And I remember going to church, praying to bring that woman back. I remember sitting in church one day, and I heard my daughter coming up to me, hey, Daddy, Daddy. And I turned around, and my ex-wife was there with her boyfriend. I didn't ask God to bring her back with a boyfriend. I told her to bring her back. But she was pregnant, and she was finding a way to try to deal with her own pregnancy at that point when we were still married. And I didn't appreciate her coming to church, but that's what she had to do. And eventually she left and moved to New York. And like I say, within a year, I found myself in Waikiki, getting busted. I found myself facing a court case. I was going to school full time. I was working at Hickam Air Force Base as an education counselor. And I went before a judge, and the judge said he didn't believe that jail was a place for me. He said, Mr. King, like, you got a good record. You spent 6 years in the military. You're going to school. But I believe you got a drug problem. And, of course, we got the arguing in court because he didn't understand. I ain't got no problem. And he brought up a case that I had back in Kentucky, and I didn't know he had pulled my records, but he did. And he put me on 5 years probation. And like I said, I ended up in Hinomaka after 7 dirty UAs. I thank God for Hinomaka. I thank God for the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous because that's what was taught there. That fourth step that we was talking about by going to the board, after that, I didn't get anything out of it. I remember walking up on the board. I remember writing down I gave my wife VD. I didn't believe I wrote it down. I looked at my handwriting, and it didn't look like my handwriting. But it was on the board, and I could not believe that I would write such a thing down in front of people I don't know. Then I realized that the girls in the room ain't going to want to date me now. You know, and I could not convince myself that I wrote that down. I was very upset that I wrote it down, and I got upset with the counselors for asking me questions about that. And I remember sitting down pissed mad. And all of a sudden, the steps started all over. They began to talk about step one. And they began to talk about the obsession of the mind and the allergy of the body. I began to understand a little bit about what they was talking about. And I thank God they were doing it out of the 12 and 12. Thank God for that last page of the 12 and 12 where it says, why do everybody got to hit bottom? Because it says most of the people, if they have not hit bottom, won't be willing to do the rest of these steps. I thank God at the bottom of that page, it says, under the last of alcoholism, I was driven here. I didn't just show up. I was driven here. And then and only then did I become as open-minded to conviction, as willing to listen as only the dying can. And I became ready to do anything. And I'm telling you, when I read it, it didn't make much sense, but it made sense. And all of a sudden, they went to step two, and my life changed. My spiritual friends in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous started with the second step. In the 12 and 12, it talks about five different characteristics. It talks about this guy that's agnostic. He calls himself a person who doesn't believe in God, right? Call him belligerent one, belligerent. He doesn't believe. And it tells him that he too can find a higher power as long as he knows it's not him. And he can use AA because it seems like AA works. But I tell people when we look at that characteristic that what do you mean by AA works? Well, you got to do what AA does. And if you're going to make AA work, then you got to do the same thing that people in here have done. They read how it works. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. It's talking about doing what people in Alcoholics Anonymous do. When I first came out of treatment, my sponsor asked me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. He told me to call him every day between 5:30 and 6:30 for 365 days straight. I did that. In those 90 days that I went to meeting, I had to come back to him and tell him after those 90 days what I heard about people who went back out. And when people say, you know, we're going to work this program the way the AA worked, well, simple little things, like get a sponsor. Not just get a sponsor, but a sponsor you're going to work with. It says get a home group. Not just a home group that you call your home group, but a home group you show up to, right? It says get into service, right? And it says service starts generally with your home group. So if you ain't got a home group, then you can't just get into service because you need to be in service at your home group first. And then it says develop a relationship with a higher power. Right? Thank God that for me, it was God. There was no other alternative. It was always God. And then it talks about staying away from old friends. If I want to stay clean and sober, I need to hang out with clean and sober people. If I want to be a mason, then I better quit hanging out with the carpenters and start hanging out with the masons because carpenters don't do mason work. Right? And if I want to be able to be clean and sober, I need to hang out with clean and sober people. And then it starts talking about things like when we talk about getting a home group, what he's really talking about is developing a clean and sober support system, right? And so when I began to listen to these things, I heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say that they were doing some of those things, but they still went out and drinking and used. They were doing five or six of them, but they were still going out drinking and using. When I brought that back to my sponsor after 90 days, he asked me a question. He said, so how many of those do you think you need to do? And I told him all seven. And he said, you got a chance. And you know what? I understand that today. The second characteristic talks about in the 12 and 12 is the one who's bewildered. Once had a God and lost him and still trying to find him again. It tells him to find AA too. It says AA seems to work. Why don't you use it until you can find it? Then it talks about this guy, intellectual self-sufficient. That's me. That was part of me. I'm too smart for my own good. It says you got more than a third grade education. You might be too smart for AA. AA is too simple. People that's very, very smart don't get this. Because this ain't about our intellectual thought. This is about following some directions, right? And so in the fourth characteristic, it talks about the guy Plum discussed with religion. He blamed God on war, death, whatever. And they says if he too can find a higher power if he regained his faith. The intellectual guy said he must find humility. But the guy that changed my life was the guy who comes in here, which was me, full of faith. Full of faith. No God. Had a lot of quantity of religion. Came in here at 28 years old. I've been in church 28 years. My mother has a picture of me when I was 6 months old playing Jesus in a manger. I ain't never seen it, but she told me I was in it, right? I ain't seen it. But I know my mother took me to church all my life. So there was no such thing as I didn't understand who God was. The problem was it said I had a lot of quantity of religion, but no quality of faith. It said I've been asking for something for nothing. I've been telling you this and telling you that, telling you about God and telling you about this, but it didn't match up, right? The talk sounded good, but the walk wasn't really, really good. And it talks about this guy, and it says that the problem with him is that the grace of God couldn't enter him and spell the obsession because he hadn't really cleaned house on the inside. in treatment. When I read that, I understood exactly what it meant. As a young kid growing up in Bible study and in church, I remember a class, and it flashed back on me in that treatment center about three hearts. It says, I'm born with a pure heart. As I continue to live life, I begin to get a sinful heart. And then it tells me at some point in my life, I began to start getting a black heart. And it says, the black heart is not of God. The black heart is of me. Where I begin to block him out. He's always there. And I always knew he was. But there was a point in my life where I no longer wanted to ask him for help because I wasn't willing to do the work. And all of a sudden, sitting in that treatment center, and we was reading this, it outlined the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to me. It outlined the 12 steps. And I became willing as only the dying can. As willing to listen as only someone who was dying. And I became willing to do anything. And I remember 28 days, 32 days in treatment. I guess I had about 44 days. I did a fifth step with a sponsor. I was thorough. And when I walked out of that room after 5 hours, it's like my head came up out of the water and I could finally breathe again. And I knew I had been sinking for a long time. But I just figured if I just go to church and pray and go to church and pray and go to church and pray, things would get better. But it never got better. But the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous did something different. It asked me to actually get into myself, my innermost self, and try to see what is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. And all of a sudden, my life has never been the same. I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank God for the 12 steps, all right? When people ask me how this program works, it's real simple. It's very simple. Do those 7 things. Do what everybody else in here have done, right? Sometimes we want it the Burger King way. We want to be able to go to Burger King and ask for it our way. That's not how this works. This program don't work our way. I remember my sponsor, when he was dying, one of my sponsors, he was dying, when Griff was dying. I remember calling the house, and his daughter answered the phone, and it was the day before he died. And she said, well, he's not in it that much. I said, well, I just wanted to call and let him know I'm thinking about him. And she said, wow, he must hear me talking to you because he want to speak to you. And she gave him the phone. And when she gave him the phone, all he said to me, he said, Donnie, don't stop encouraging others. On his dying bed, that's all he could think about was somebody else. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what this is all about. So, Judy, when I said to you, get up, get up. Don't, if you fall down, fall forward. I remember about 15 years ago, my roommate went out. And I remember when he went out, we used to have so many talks about going out, and we always said, if I ever went out, I'd never come back. And when he went out, he never made it back. For a year and a half, he couldn't walk back into these rooms. And I watched him deteriorate. And at 15 months, he went into a diabetic coma. And a couple of us was at the hospital with his mother, and we pulled a plug, and he died. And I never forget it. He never seen his godson play football. Never seen his godson raised up because he died. About 7 years ago, could have been a little longer, my best friend went back out. And he could not come back. He couldn't even face me. He couldn't even talk to me. Last April, me and my wife went to Minnesota. I got a call that he was dying of cancer. He hadn't spoke to me in almost 5 years because he just couldn't face me again. And no matter how many messages I left him, no matter how many times I told him I love you, no matter how many times I told him I'm not concerned about you going back out, I'm concerned about I love you. And all of a sudden, he never would call me back. And his ex-wife called me to tell me he was dying. And when she flew up there to see him, she put him on the phone and told him I'd been calling, and he called me one day. I still got the phone call. I never deleted. Because I had never talked to him for almost 6 years. He wouldn't speak to me. And all he said to me is, I'm sorry. He said, how's my son? And that's his guy's son, too. And I told him he's doing good. I sent him some pictures. And about 2 weeks later, he died. And he never could come back. And so when a person gets back up and come back around, it's our job to welcome them. It's our job to tell them, the truth. Right? We don't sit around and try to sugarcoat the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We try to let people know that this is what this is all about. This is about being clean and sober. This is about helping one alcoholic to another, right? In the sixth and the seventh step, it says this is the step that would separate the man from the boys and the woman from the girl. It says a man or a woman, someone who strives towards a perfect objective, which is of God, and a boy or girl, someone who strives towards a self-determined objective. I have to ask myself sometimes, am I trying to be a man today? I'm still trying to be a child. I want to be a man today. I want to live in the image and the likeness of Christ. I want to be like Christ. It tells me to strive towards perfection every single day of my life, but set my eyesight on nothing less. It doesn't mean I'm going to be perfect, but it tells me I must set my eyesight on nothing less than being perfect. Because if not, right around the corner, my adversary, the devil, is roaming around seeing who he may devour. It could be me. I'm not exempt from being devoured, just like no one else in this room are. So what I have to do is be vigilant. I must be vigilant. I must be aware of what's going on around me. I must be aware of who I'm hanging with. I must be aware of what other people are doing because I can get involved in it. And so today I choose very well who I hang with. I choose very well who I call my friends. I choose very well to be a friend of Jim. In order for me to be a friend of Jim, I must live by some of Jim's standards. Jim got some standards that if I don't want to live up to him, then I probably can't be a friend of Jim's. I thank God for that because he allowed me to be responsible. I'm in with this. I remember my sponsor told me, when I first met my wife, 21 years ago. She is still in a relationship with someone at that time, and I've been knowing her for about 24 years, but we decided to get together. And my sponsor told me that one thing I could not do was have any kind of conversation with her ex until me and her had been together for a year. Now, I needed to have some conversations with him because he wasn't acting right, right? He was a little upset, you know, he was talking to her, and he was making me a little upset because he's a man and I'm a man and he got no business talking to her. He needs to talk to me. So my sponsor told me, you can't talk to him for a whole year. I followed that direction. I didn't talk to this guy for a whole year. And after that year, though, I was ready to go talk to him. I had some things I needed to say, right? And my sponsor said, okay, you can go talk to him. And then he said to me, but take one of your sponsees with you. I said, why I got to take one of my sponsees with me? He said, Donnie, you know why you got to take one of your sponsees with you? Because they'll make you act right. So I had a lot of sponsees, and I had one that wasn't quite, you know, developed yet. And so I figured that I would take him with me and we're going to talk to this guy. Because since he wasn't quite developed yet, he would understand if I didn't act right. But that ain't what happened. Me and Jim was together, and we was riding, and he was taking me home, and I seen him. And Jim is a professor. Jim was a professor of UH, and, you know, he's an older man, right? You know, he's 74 today. I told him, I need to talk to that guy. He said, no, you can't talk to that guy. I said, yeah, I do. You know, you my sponsor. You ain't my sponsor, right? And he said, all right, I give you 10 minutes to talk to him. And we pulled over, and he was drinking. And I went over to talk to him. And, of course, you know, I wanted to say a few things to get him a little agitated since he was drinking. And he started getting a little agitated, and Jim said, it's time to go. And, you know, if Jim wasn't with me, I wouldn't have been ready to go. But when I looked in Jim's eyes, I seen a person who loves me, and how can I hurt him? How can I hurt Jim? And I got in that car with Jim, and we left. And I remember talking to my sponsor about it, and he asked me a question. He said, Donnie, you know why I asked you to do that? I said, why? He said, what would happen if you had fought with your kid's dad? Because remember, those two kids are living with me. I'm raising his two kids. What would have ever happened if I had fought this man? What would his two kids thought about me? And when I thought about that, I said, wow, never thought about that. Never thought about what those kids would feel if I did it. You know, about 5 years later, that man called me and asked me about getting into an anger management program. He never would have did that if I would have fought him. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is real. If you don't believe it's real, get into this program. And watch the knowledge of God go into your head. And watch the knowledge of God go from your head to your heart. Because, see, without knowledge, you can't do anything. So you got to get the knowledge. I know what's in the books. I know what the books have said. But what's in my heart allows me to live what's in my head. And because of that, I believe that I am who God wants me to be. I believe there was one day that I would get to heaven and God would say, good and done, my good and faithful servant. I believe that. And it's the only thing that means something to me. It's the most important thing to me is to hear that. And I think if I keep hanging around y'all, I keep doing what y'all do. My sponsor's in the back. His wife died last year. And I've watched him through his relationship with his wife. And I watched him since she died. And he'll always be an inspiration to me because he has shown me how to go through life. I remember from this podium about 6 years ago, the speaker shared about his sponsor running off with his wife after he did his fifth step. And I remember sitting out there. I've been at this convention for the last 28 years. I've never missed one. And he said, you know, I had a hard time coming back to AA because how could he do such a thing? And how could my wife run off with my sponsor? And he said he stayed away from AA for about 3 or 4 years. And all of a sudden, he found himself in that predicament where it's almost time to go drink again. He was hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And he came back to AA. And he said it was the same area where his sponsor and his wife are still together. And he walked into the rooms, and there was a few people in there knew him. He had been sober about 16 years and came back, and he still had been sober about 18. And he said he walked back in the room, and he just had a hard time. And he said a guy walked over to him one day, and he said, how you doing? And he said, not too good. He said, I know. He said, but you're hanging in there, and I'm proud to see you back. And he said, yeah, but this is tough. And the guy said to him, he said, you know, so have you ever thought about why this happened to you? Not that God allowed it to happen, but why it happened to you? And he said, no. He said, well, because he knew you could handle it. He knew you could handle it. He didn't give it to me, because if he gave it to me, I probably would have killed him. But he gave it to you. Because he knew that you would come up here and you would share it from this podium, and somebody out there would hear it. And that's the one alcoholic working with another alcoholic, telling them no matter what, we ain't got to drink and we ain't got to use. But not only that, we ain't got to act a fool. We ain't got to act a fool, right? We can do this and do it the right way. And the guy said, wow. And while he was standing up this podium, he said since he had been sharing that for the last 6 years, he had had many people come up to him and tell him, thank you. I've been experiencing that too. Not just my sponsor. It can be my brother. It can be my dad. It can be my best friend. Life happens. Good things happen to good people. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. Bad things happen to bad people. That's life. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to live one day at a time on life's terms. And I'm thankful. I'm thankful for that wife I've been with now for the last 21 years. I thank God for her. I thank God for her Al-Anon program. Because if she didn't have Al-Anon, I don't know what she would have did with a guy like me. But I'm thankful for that. She has been a great encouragement to me. I minister in and out of the program. And I believe in what I do. In doing what I'm doing, sometimes it ain't the most popular thing in the world when you say something to someone you love that they don't want to hear. But I'm not saying it because I hate them. I'm not saying it because I want to be mean. I say some things because that's what God tells me to say. And when I go home, sometimes I have to toss and turn about that work that God is asking me to do. And I can look over there at her and I can see her sleep and I realize that's what the joy is. Is having someone you can come home to and know that they'll be there for you. And so, Judy, thank you once again for asking me to share. I want to thank you so much for getting yourself back up and going again. And yesterday was yesterday. Thanks.
Mahalo, Donnie. At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker for this evening, Chrissy P. from Haleiwa, Oahu.
Aloha. My name is Chrissy, and I am an alcoholic. And Imua Waimea is my home group. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful share that was, Donnie. I mean, really, like, how do we follow that? You know, that was like perfect step study, you know. It was beautiful. Thank you. I want to thank Judy also for asking me to share. What an honor to ask me to share. And like Donnie was mentioning, I too was one that had to come back. That was very, very beautiful, you know. That's what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just want to say, I'm not a certificate speaker, but I just got to tell my story before I start. I want to acknowledge for our friends who are visiting from out of the state, welcome. And here in the islands, in some of our meetings, sometimes when we close our meetings with prayer, we have a little addendum that we ask, that we put in there, and sometimes we pray for the children, you know, that get caught in the crossfire. And tonight, I'd like to recognize two very beautiful women that are here tonight, and that is my daughters, Kalena and Stevie. And having said that, you know, I want to mention, you know, we say all the time, you know, we give credit to those who have come before us, but we also have to acknowledge those who have come behind us, and those are our children, you know. Judy has her daughter here, Nani, you know, and I have to say, when I think about the family afterwards, you know, my children have never ever seen me drink or use, you know. On the 15th of this month, I celebrated 31 years clean and sober. My husband also, you know, on the 16th celebrated 31 years clean and sober. My home group, we meet Monday nights at St. Peter and Paul's Church in Waimea. It's a speaker discussion group. And this month we celebrated 22 years. And I say that because, you know, just like Al-Anon, you know, and I just speak for myself, you know, in my own heart, is that the children, you know, they never seen me and Daddy drink. But they did see me have to sit some time apart from them. It was their time, and they had to sacrifice too, you know. They have seen giving up their beds, you know. They have to stand in line behind the auntie and uncle who was looking to get sober, because I'm old school, we bring them home, you know what I mean? And my daughters already know, like, okay, tell uncle he can sleep in my room. You know, they know, you know, they've been part of my recovery. And the children, you know, in this program have learned to give, you know, as we learn to give. You know, my children have felt the hand of a loving higher power. And I want to thank them and acknowledge them because they gave too, you know. You know how we, you know, those midnight phone calls, the mommy, mommy, oh, I got to go, but I got to pick up auntie from detox before and after. You know, our keiki is all involved with that, you know. And tonight they're here, so I just want to acknowledge that for our children, you know. It's not just before and after, they're here. And So that was important that I say that. And my loving husband is here also. It was beautiful, Donnie. You know, so we have one story, and that's why I came to share that story. So I consider myself, my name is Christy, I consider myself a second generation Alcoholics Anonymous. What do I mean by that? at the age of 7, my parents, Harry and Mary L, got 12-step into this wonderful fellowship of ours, which was really just a fellowship that was at its infant stage. And prior to that, I come from a family. I have 6 siblings, 5, thank you, 5 girls and 1 boy. And we lived out in the country, out in Laie, with my grandparents and a very religious community, you know. My father was raised a Mormon, my mother was a Catholic, and we lived in Laie with cousins. The number was 15 children in a 4-bedroom house. And during that time, you know, I think from the age of 4 or 5, we were always cared for by other adults, aunts and aunties and grandparents. And my parents was away, and a part of that, you know, they was working, you know, trying to raise 6 children. And when they wasn't working, they was taking that much, needed relaxed sessions. You know, and I never really saw them, you know, and it was a very lonely time for me during those years. And to be quite honest, you know, I can't really have any loving memories of them when I was that age. I remember them in my beautiful moments after they came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so let me share you a little bit. I remember living in the car. We had a station wagon, and we were homeless, and we were living in the Ala Moana Park. And 6 of us with my mom and my dad. But as a child, it didn't bother me. I got to be honest, I was totally happy. That was my first feeling of happiness, to be honest, because they were with us. And later on, you know, as I grew up and we found out what the backstory of all of that was, is that they dragged themselves out of the household, out of the community, because another thing that I remember is that when they drank, they fought. I have another memory, and I only need 2 memories, you know, to paint the picture. Of a big fight, and we were all put in the station wagon, all 15 of us children, in I think in the 4 vehicles that was parked out in the yard. And by the way, this is Laie, so this is a Mormon community, you know what I mean? So when the fight's going on, the whole community know what's going on. And my grandmother was a pillar of the church. You know, so it was very humiliating to her, and she was a brand new widow, so she didn't know what to do with us, you know. So anyways, we're sitting in the station wagon, and my cousin, who later on became a member of this fellowship and died sober, God rest his soul, my cousin Chucky, was, struggling with the blanket, and he was saying, "Grandma, Grandma, what movie are we going to go to?" And we're all like piled in this station wagon. You know, I don't know, I think maybe I was 4. But in my head, you know, I was saying to myself, "What are you talking about? Are you so stupid? Don't you know what's going on?" You know, my mom and dad was fighting. And when they fight, I mean, you know, it's horror dogs. You know, I mean, they come with sickles and butcher knives. They're going to kill, you know what I mean? And the adults in the family is keeping us safe. And my father was the head of the household. Later on, they got sober. And so that was my circumstances as a child. And this is what I know. I know from the homelessness in Ala Moana, we went to Camp Fort Housing, Building 5, and we got a place to live. I probably 6, 7 years old. And in this house, it was totally empty. You know, when you're running around on an empty house, it echoes. But for me, it was like a playground because I was happy. I was with my parents, you know. And then one day, something happened. Some strangers came to the house. And there were two Haole people, or Caucasian people. One lady, she had flaming red hair, green emerald eyes, and no teeth. And another man, his name was Roland. And anyways, when they came into the housing, and they came to pick up my mama, and she left with them, and the following day they came back to grab my father. In the meantime, and something magical happened, because they went to an AA meeting and they never picked up a drink after that. So I'm a child, and at this time, my mother is trying to keep her wits in, trying to raise 6 children. They didn't really have, you know, mother's assistance like they have today, you know. And I remember, you know, going out and getting newspapers, you know, like the recycling, like we was going to recycle. And this is in the early 60s. I don't think anybody had, you know, Go Green on their mind back in the 60s. So we were getting newspapers because my mother was building beds. And she was a proud woman, you know. And anyways, when the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to get her, life started to take on a whole new meaning. And I want to say this too. The members that 12-step then knew how to do it. It was kind of it was all 100% spiritual. They knew exactly when to bring food and not to bring food, because my mother is a proud woman, you know. And the lady brought sheets, you know, because she saw our little newspaper beds. And my mother took those sheets and she put them on the window. So later on, you know, because she's a proud woman, you know, and you know, was severely impoverished. But we used to go up to the mountain and pick lilikoi. And my mother used to make lilikoi swipe, rubbish cans full, you know. She was organic before its time, you know. Anyways, so those are some of the memories that I remember, okay. And then things started to change. Next thing we know, you know, my parents had these new friends that was coming over the house, and there was very different people. You know, in the housing at that time, it's Kamehameha housing, it was 100% Native Hawaiian people. So when the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came, first of all, you knew that, you know, they were granted that courage that they had asked for. When God grant me the courage, they were granted that courage. Because trust me, you need courage to roll in there, you know. And they came and they continued to love on them. and something wonderful happened. And I cannot really explain it, but I can say that they fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and the God of Alcoholics Anonymous fell in love with them. And they stayed sober ever since. And they did exactly what Donnie was saying, you know, get into service. My father was a delegate, and when he went to New York, you know, they asked him, Harry, what is the great state, what is the consciousness of the great state? What are the groups saying over there? And he said, well, you know, we don't have consciousness, we don't have groups, but I think, and they said, well, Harry, we're not interested in what you think, but I tell you what, you got to go back and build the foundation for our state. And today we call that the area, you know. And so he responded to the call. So why am I saying that? Because during that time, I'm just trying to show you and share with you the love and the love and service that they got into. And I have to say, too, really at that time, you didn't have that. There was no Native Hawaiian. You know, my father said he felt like a fly in a bowl of milk. There was no Native Hawaiians, no locals, nobody. You know, it was just all Caucasian people. But I will say this, as a child, I fell in love with them. I can tell you all the aunties, from Auntie Selma, Auntie Virginia, all of them was very kind and loving to me. You know, as a child, that is very important, you know. So I was given the love from the Ohana of Alcoholics Anonymous that at the time, my own Ohana was incapable of doing so. You know, and as a child, you know, sometimes I think, you know, I got to be honest, I sometimes think of, you know, Shirley Temple. There's the old Shirley Temple movie where she was with Abraham Lincoln, and he had to look for the apple and the stuff. That's how these aunties were treating me. Every time I came into them, they go, okay, check my pocket, and now we have a mint. And then I see another auntie who say, oh, you know what? Oh, Auntie Virginia, she was always, they used to love on me, you know? And they didn't have that much kids. There was only one other kid, and his name was Tommy, you know, and there was Auntie Marie's son. And we used to run around in the meetings, and we were so colorful in the meetings. They used to have an AA meeting down in the jail down in Honolulu. And while they had the AA meetings, you know, they would have coffee and donuts, and we were so excited because we could have donuts, you know? And we used to play, while the AA meeting was going on, we used to play jail. Do you know what I mean? My brother was the sheriff, and we were the prisoners, and everybody take turns. That's how we was, we kept ourselves busy while the AA meetings was going on. We never know what was going on, but we knew that Mommy and Daddy was okay. I remember one of the miracles, I gotta tell you this, not gonna come personal, you know. One day, my sisters was all jumping up and down. And the reason why is because they was older and they knew that my mom and dad had reconciled with one another on the physical plane, which I didn't understand that, you know. And I was saying, what's going on? What's going on? They said, no, Mommy and Daddy, they're going to stay together, you know, and that's a big deal. Mommy and Daddy are going to stay together. And I said, oh, that's good, that's good. In other words, divorce wasn't coming down the pipe. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught them how to love, but taught them how to forgive and love one another. And as a result, I was given a childhood. Now, I'd like to share a little bit about this childhood in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I said I mentioned earlier that I'm a second-generation Alcoholics Anonymous. So in this childhood, I share one experience. My mom and dad used to come to the conferences. They was like, you know, on the foundation of the conference. It used to be at El Cai Hotel. And one October, there was a fire, electrical fire in the home. And the fireman came, and my mom just got a brand new shag carpet, and she was saying, you know, fireman, take off your boots and stuff, you know. But the house is burning, by the way. Okay, that's my mom. Anyway, so, you know, she get us up, and we all get up and get outside. The fire department is there, and I remember standing there with my T-shirt and those sponge curlers, those foamy ones, you know, in my head. And of course, the whole neighborhood is rallied, like, what's going on, action, you know? And so all my friends is like, what's going on? The house is burned and whatever, burning, and the smoke is bellowing. And the fire department put that out, and, you know, they get the black smoke out, and my mother and father are happy that we're safe. Okay, so that happens, and then, of course, they said, okay, that's got school tomorrow, so you need to go to bed. So we go upstairs, and this is my mom and dad. They're sitting down, and they're talking, and they're like, wasn't that meeting awesome, you know? They just was right back on the meeting, you know? The whole house, half the house is burned, by the way. You know what I mean? And we're sitting on the steps laughing at them, going, look at mom and dad. They're just talking about the meeting and the speaker and the message. And we was cracking up laughing. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. Totally okay, knowing God got their back. All they was worried about is us. But I remember sitting there, and we was all laughing. Like, look at mom, they're so nuts. They're like talking about... It was like totally okay. Talk about serenity in the moment. I seen that. You know, and of course, I tried to stay up, but it's like, get to bed right now. Anyways, that's just, there are many, many experiences of that childhood. And that was given to me by the members of Alcoholics Anonymous because my parents fell in love with the spiritual principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it did broaden and deepen their relationship with each other and many, many members that came down the pipe. And so that's their story. So anyways, my father is a really nice guy. You know, he's raising his 5 daughters and one son. And my dad is, you know, he's a father, you know. So he tells me one day, he says, I enter into adolescence, and I have all those inadequate feelings that are coming up, which I take my first drink, and all of a sudden, I feel good. It kind of just calms me, and I didn't think anything bad was going to happen, you know. Baby Miller's was happening, you know. I mean, I don't think I started drinking, I was going to be an alcoholic. In fact, I was thinking that because I know about AA and I had about 5 birthdays over at the Ilikai Hotel, surely this is not going to happen to me. That's some form of protection, right? But what I didn't see was the protection of my heart. And when I say that is I was very lonely. I had major low self-esteem regarding my ability to learn, and I already had in my mind what kind of a person would rescue me from myself. And I was at the age of 14, and then I ran into this man who was from Sacramento. He was in the Marine Corps. He was Italian, and I just, what I would like to call an opihi. Or for opihi, I just went clean, you know. And for our visitors, those are limpets, you know, the barnacles that speak on. That's what I was emotionally, you know. And I was starting to not go into the defiance mode as a teenager with my mom and my dad. And my dad said, you know what, Chrissy? If you're going to live under this roof, you're going to live under my rules. And I right away bought a ticket to Fantasy Airlines, like Dr. Silkworth talks about. You know, he says, you know, we are in full flight from reality, and that's exactly what I did. You know, I didn't run away from my dad like it was like a, you know, like, oh, I'm running for my life. I actually thought he gave me permission to leave. So I went and packed my stuff, kissed him on the cheek, and left. And I went to go play house with a man at the age of 14. And I just talk about obsession of the mind. That was total obsession. I did not know that until I hit bottom and came into this wonderful program of ours. But the whole time was self-will run riot. And that's step one that says, you know what, Chrissy, your life is unmanageable. I'd like to put in a den by Chrissy. You know, your life is unmanageable. You're an alcoholic and your life is unmanageable by Chrissy. Why? Because at the age of 14, I just went doo-doo-doo and just left. Hi, bye, Daddy. And I went off to have this life. Anyways, a lot of alcohol, a lot of drugs, a lot of pain. You know, a lot of pride. Many times I wanted to come home, but, you know, my committee would say, no, they're going to tell you so. You know, you can prove them, you know, redouble my efforts at control. So, that's my run. At the age of 24, I come back to Hawaii. This time, for the last time, because I already made many geographics between California and Hawaii. My father has a heart attack. I jump on the plane and I fly home. But you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is awesome because Uncle Herb's daughter was there, you know, mommy, when I got the phone call that my father had the heart attack, and I never know what to do. I had full breakdown right there, and mommy came to my assistance and helped me and my sister, you know, to focus so we could get our plane ticket to come home. And my father, thank God, you know, did not pass away, but I didn't know that until I arrived here in Hawaii. And on the way coming home, I remember saying to myself, shoot, I've been looking for somebody to love me. And the one man that I know loves me is about to go. And it just woke me up, you know, and I never left Hawaii after that. Did that mean I was raised for Alcoholics Anonymous? No. You know, what happened was I stayed on the island, and what happened was that I stayed with my parents, and they were having a step study workshop, like what Donnie was saying, you know, and the women in there, they was bringing it, you know, and I never heard that. And I guess that's why it's so important, because it's deep and it's intimate, you know, and women were sharing, like, they was what I like to call, you know, they just took their hair down and they just would bring it from the hip, you know, to the point where I heard what they were saying. It was beyond the actual liquid, you know, and today I understand alcohol is just a symptom. Alcoholism and drug addiction is just a symptom. They was expressing what the problem was, and I heard it. You know, I like to say, it's just like we talk about the Titanic, you know, and I would say, yeah, the Titanic, you know, I took down the Titanic, the iceberg, but not what you saw, but what was under the water is what would rip that ship to smithereens. And that's how, when I went to that step study, that's how I understood that I was a weak vessel and I was sinking. And I also understood what the problem was. And because of these women that was sharing free from their heart and then now, you know, the message was planted. Okay, so right away, I said to myself, okay, what I got to do, you know, because right there, I'm going to manage my life, even my recovery, what I got to do, I'm going to do it. You know, if you told me, you know, happy, joyous, and free is in aisle B, that's where I'm going to go. You see what I'm saying? That's how I thought. And I know that today, because, you know, in the 12 by 12, it says, you know, we had approached Alcoholics Anonymous, expected to be taught self-confidence. But self-confidence was of no good whatever, you know. But I was going to try. So what I did is I went to Hina Mauka. I went to my dad who was, you know, he was in the field of recovery. And I said, Dad, what should I do? He said, read my mind is what he said. And then The next thing I knew, I was standing in front of Hina Malka, you know, looking for an application. And I can tell you, just a little bit before that, you know, I had that anxiety, like, you know, what a fog was lifting up. Like, I got to be something. I got to do something. What I got to do? And I said, I got to get me a job. So I looked in the paper and I said, okay, I got to get me a job. And I was looking at, you know, what kind of jobs they have. Of course, I couldn't understand anything that was in the paper. But I did see my eyes gazed over to exotic dancer, you know. You know? And my father's hand was on my shoulder. He put his hand on my shoulder and really calmed me down. And he said, Chrissy, you don't have to do anything right now. You just keep going to the meetings, you know. You just keep going to the meetings. And I did that. I met a girl, her name was Diana Quinn. I can say her name because she passed away. Very, very cool friend and my angel. And she helped escort me to the doors of Hina Malka. I put some time in there. At that time, it was 6 months. Because some were sicker than others, but back then they would just shut the doors down during the holidays. And I love to say I put 14 months together. So I relate totally. You know, 14 months together. And my disease would raise her ugly head. And basically she, you know, my disease just would rise and I was envying people. You know, I'll be honest. I was envying my very good friends. They were falling in love. They were getting scholarships for college and all those things. And next thing I knew, I was over there whining to God. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I was. I was like self-pity to the 100 power. You know what I mean? And I got to tell you, when I pick up that drink, boom, I like to say that I was whining because I had nothing. When I picked up the drink, I knew I wasn't nothing, but I was drinking already, you know. And on October 15th, I came back to my home group, not Malia. Malia was my home group at the time, but Coco's, and I stood up. And I said, my name is Chrissy, and I have one day, you know. And having said that, okay, this is what I think that my steps went crack open. You know how they say, you know, we had approached Alcoholics Anonymous, expected to be taught, you know, self-confidence. During that 14 months, my sponsor, she taught me how to read. She got me one of those 12 tapes, and I would follow the book, and I would learn how to read. So, you know, I came, so, you know, and I remember asking to read how it works. And I'd be so afraid that people would laugh. And I would take a long time and I would stumble over autonomy, anonymy, or whatever the word was. But nobody laughed. Everybody was still and silent. And they helped me to get past that. So in those very days, those early 14-month days, I did learn how to show up and suit up. And you ask, why would I go out? I don't know why. I just know that I have to concede to my innermost self, you know, the entire problem, not just alcohol and drugs, but that I had to turn over my life. Not my disease to God. He wanted all of me. And that's what would happen, you know. And that's when, you know, I wasn't complying, I was cooperating. You know, I wasn't dragging my feet to my home group. I was up there shaking hands, you know. You know, everybody was fighting to be the coffee maker now, you know. I mean, really, my whole attitude started to change. And at year 5, I got married. I met my husband in treatment, you know. I'm going to say this. The thing that really caught my eye with my husband is he had a family visit and my mother-in-law came. We affectionately call her Tutu, but her name is Peggy. And she came for a visit and my husband took her by the arm and promenaded with her around the garden. And that was it. You know, victim number 3, you know. But it was like... I was like, I'm locking and loading. Boom. That was so, you know, that was it. that kind of kindness and attention for his mother, that was attractive to me. And he got my attention. Poor thing. He's still kind of reeling from that. Anyway, so 5 years, I get married. I have these two beautiful children. And my sponsor at the time was sponsoring a lot of other women. And she told me, Chrissy, don't worry. You know, don't worry about this new life, about these beautiful new children. You're going to be a mother now. Not to worry. Just keep doing what you're doing. Go to the meeting. Show up. Suit up. You know, be there for the other women, you know. And so the women of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we don't just share what it was like. They share us our recipes. They share with us, you know, how they do their babies. They, you know, they're, you know, like, you know, there's certain ways, like, you know, when the baby got colic, you know, you get the olive oil and you roll me and you hammer it, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, that stuff to give us peace and serenity as women and as moms, new moms, you know, that we can do this one day at a time. And that's year five, and at year six, I was unemployable. And in our family, there is an orchard. I'm going to share a little bit. We had an orchard that was not being utilized. And I went to work for my brother-in-law at the time, you know, and I was harvesting macadamia nuts off the ground. And at that time, I was like, and I remember, it took me back to my my summers in Molokai when I used to work in the pineapple fields back then. And I was working in this orchard and harvesting nuts. And I remember having this one-on-one with God as I understood him. And I would say he did show up just like he showed up tonight. And I remember asking God, I'm so scared. I don't know what to do. I am afraid. And, you know, prior to me having that prayer, I thought he was going to be mad at me because I was afraid. And I heard that in that inner voice, you know, saying, Chrissy, it's okay if you're afraid. Just pick up those nuts and be afraid, you know? And, you know, it lifted. The fear lifted, and next thing I know, I started picking up the nuts. And the reason why I'm telling you this is that that's what I did for a living. You know, I had my babies, I went to meetings, and I took care of them. I did ask God to help me to be a good mom. So I needed to be present, right? You can hear that a lot of the stuff, they wasn't present. And I wanted to be present to them, and God made it available. And so I had to stop picking up nuts. He sent me three angels, three 60, 70, 72-year-old Filipino retired women that showed me how to work. It's good work, you know, but they work with joy in their heart, you know. They used to bring their food and they show me, like, and talk story. And I used to feel pity for them. I was like, poor thing, they gotta work, you know. They're so old, they gotta work. Over there, feeling sorry for them. By the way, all of their kids is doctors, lawyers, attorneys. One is a senator, you know, these ladies. And their own houses, everything. So God showed me, they sent sponsors how to work in humility with these three ladies. And by the way, they're pillars of the church. I love them dearly, you know. And they taught me through grace and humility how to have joy. To make a long story short, I used to go to meetings and, husk the nuts, roast the nuts. And I would constantly be in service, step study, going to detox, going to IHS, picking up women. You know, if they want to stay sober, fine. You know, I got beds. Come home with me. You know, I did do stuff like that. And my daughters would say, okay, Mom, who's coming? Oh, this is Auntie Nancy. Okay, you know, and they would learn how to make coffee for them right next to them making cocoa for themselves. That's what I'm talking about, family, you know. Anyways, long story short, I started selling nuts on the side of the road. My sister was in the industry. I used to be in the industry at one time, but like I said, I was unemployable. And I had that spiritual experience with God as I understood Him. And I got to tell you something. It wasn't just about the future, because I didn't know. Today I have a company. I'm academia in that company, the only one on this island, and it's doing well. It's by the grace of God and taking that next indicated step. But the biggest thing is when I was working, I was picking up husks. I would go to the huskers and would get 100-pound bags of husking. And that's dirty work. Dirty work. Trust me. You know, when I get in the shower every day, it's mud coming even out of my nose and everything. But while I was working hard, and even though I was all dirty, God was cleaning me up inside. Because I remember saying, God, I was willing to do anything. I don't want to go back to what it was like. You know, the boyfriend, and when I wasn't with the boyfriend, I was on the streets, you know, doing what we do, you know, surviving. You know, when they say, you know, that, incomprehensible demoralization, right? In Alcoholics Anonymous, that incomprehensible demoralization became comprehensible. I understood everything, every place, every person, you know, and so I needed to stay sober. And I needed to change. And God, you gave me that as a way to change. You know, sorry, Father, for going the easier, softer way. Sorry for cutting the corners. You know, sorry for all those things that once wounded my soul. And this was it. It was the perfect opportunity to be taught by these three ladies. And we would pray in the morning and we would work. And they would teach me how to work with joy, you know, and I knew that God was cleaning me up on the inside, that all the sloth and greed and envy and, you know, things that, you know, I ended up hurting me, you know. One day, I'll say this, one day, it came up, I had this Rolls Royce. This wasn't after the macadamia nuts, by the way. But before, you know. So we're rolling up in this Rolls Royce. I come knocking on the door. I said, Daddy, I want to take you to lunch. We have a jet, and we're going to go to Maui. I want to take you to lunch. Thinking I was all that. He's going to be proud of me, right? The materialism, that's all I knew. And he says, no, honey, not today. And he closed the door, and I left. When I got sober, I remembered that moment, and I realized I could hear his heart break at that moment, you know, just a little bit of nippet. You don't need that much, you know, little goes a long way, right? So this time while I'm doing this, you know, I'm making more contact with God, and I just kept on doing what I was doing, you know, showing up, suiting up, and we started a business off the side of the road, you know. I was selling macadamia nuts in sandwich bags for $4.25 off the hood of my car. I was pregnant with my second daughter, and my oldest daughter was on my hip. And I showed up, and I suited up, just like you guys taught me. You know, and then I would come home, get ready, get my babies ready, go to the meeting, you know. I continued to do that, you know. What worked in the beginning always worked. And I went through step study many times. Today, I give it away. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know. God enabled me He blessed me so that I can bless others. That's the whole reason. This is all his success. It's not really my success. It is his success, you know. And all I had to do was show up and suit up, you know. And I sponsor women, many women, you know. Some of them, it's just for a path. We just journey for a while. You know, I just had two ladies that flew in from Alaska. I was like, girl, I heard you were sharing. So we came in. I was like, so I've had fellowship. Just like they promised, you know, He promised that in the big book. You know, that what I give to you, Heavenly Father, what I give to you, you're going to give to countless others. And I believe that promise came true. You know, I have to say that, you know, we have challenges. Of course we have. You know, but that only makes us stronger. You know, that's the spiritual gym that we go through. The happiness that I get as a result, I'm going to be celebrating my wedding anniversary next week. And we'll be married 28 years. The pages and the wisdom from this fellowship come alive according to my experience. So I'll share one on my wedding day. I got a friend from Alcoholics Anonymous. She's an agent. She could gift me with a room. The girls from Alcoholics Anonymous, who all got sober, they're all in my wedding. I'm getting married at the Catholic Church, Our Lady of Peace Cathedral. This is the thing that I dreamed of when I was a little girl, and you know, that came about. So my mother is there. My father had already passed away. He was in heaven, but trust me, he was there. And we roll up to the church. And on the way coming to the church, one of my best friends, I don't know why, but she just started drinking, you know. And it didn't occur to me to say, can I have a non-alcoholic limousine? I didn't know. I'm the bride. I'm getting ready, right? I mean, if you've been a bride, you didn't even know. You're just trying to make it out the door. So I get up to the church and I say to my friend, I said, what happened? You know, what happened? Her sponsor, which is my mother, is opening up the door, right? And I'm over there trying to 12-step her in the limousine, okay? My sister, who is now in the fellowship, and I love her, at the time wasn't in the fellowship, but she respected the day. She knew. So we were going to roll with the luau after everything is done, but she respected the day. So what did I come away with that? I came away with no human power can do this. Not sponsors, not whole home groups. Trust me, all of Malia went rogue. They were there. You see that thing? You're thinking, what the heck? Your sponsor is right here. How can you pick up that drink? I don't know. It's a mystery. You know? Then I remember, you know, that the only defense I have is a spiritual one. You know, and I just was like, oh my goodness, you know, and I almost missed the wedding, to be honest, you know. You know, Vicky was over there going, Chrissy, Mom calling you. He's like, what, over there trying to talk to her, and then the organ is going, and everybody's singing, and my mom is like, Chrissy, your groom is waiting for you. Oh, okay, you know what I mean. I remember that day clearly, you know. And then I remember, as active alcoholism, that's the things we do. I didn't stay angry with her. I understood. I love her. You know, and just because I don't see her now doesn't mean she's in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous someplace else, maybe in San Francisco, in L.A., any place in the world, because we're all over, and I pray for her daily, and we still love each other. It doesn't matter, because love is the key. So that's some of my experience, strength, and hope. I don't even know my timing here. I didn't even bring a clock. You know, I'm still kind of going on Hawaiian time. But if I was to say, you know, today I'm still, you know, still at 31 years. I show up in my home group. My husband is 31 years. You know, 22 years. He still set up the chairs. We're still out there welcoming people. You know, we're still doing what we're supposed to be doing. You know, so I just struggled out.